All right, we're starting here. So welcome to Office Hours number 3. My name is Sig Ausfresser. I'm joined here with my co-host Ed. Ed, hello.
Yes. Hello, everybody. This is Edward Ng, joining you guys for Office Hours number 3. Thanks for joining us. We've got some interesting things to talk about as we wait for more people to join the channel and post questions in the QA channel.
So please do post questions if you have any. Otherwise, we have a few questions from people who are not able to join the live cast, so we can start with those. But I thought we would do something a little different this time rather than just like introducing ourselves with a general background. Why don't we just start with stating the cards that we most recently purchased and the cards that we most recently sold.
Sure.
So do you want to go first?
Sure. Yeah. I think this is a good idea. And if I look back at my spreadsheet here, I try to keep good notes in terms of what I bought and what I sold. Looking back at that, the last card I bought should be Ravenous Trap from Zendikar. And it was a foil version of that. And I bought a playset of those at $5 each. It wasn't really to flip the card so much, but I didn't have a playset, and I saw the card being played a lot more now, especially with the Arc Light Phoenix decks popping up all over Modern, and some of those play that in the sideboard, as well as a lot of other decks in Modern. So I decided to pick those up, because I wanted to have a playset, of my own, to have and play, any tournaments, coming up. I don't know how many tournaments I'll be playing coming up, especially with the baby, but I definitely wanted to have a playset of these, so I got this.
So, this is a sideboard card, right? That sees play and across multiple formats, and it's really a graveyard hate card, right?
Yeah, it's a graveyard hate card. It's not bad against, you know, decks like Dredge, also against opposing Arcquake Phoenix decks. It sees play in a lot of play in Vintage, which is not really a driver for, you know, price, really, for cards, but like I said, Arcquake Phoenix decks, some of them do play it in sideboard, and that card is all over Modern now, and there's lots of different versions of that deck. Dredge, any deck can really play it because, you know, it's kind of like a free spell, which is why I picked up the card, because it can go on any deck, pretty much any deck sideboard.
It's funny that you mentioned the Vintage, because the only time I've ever cast a spell is in Vintage.
Yeah.
It felt good against a Dredge deck.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely sees a lot of play in Vintage, and it's very powerful there.
So what's the most recent card that you sold?
The most recent card that I sold, that was an interesting thing when I was looking back at my spreadsheet here. I don't think it was really one single card, because I actually did a couple of buy list orders to Card Kingdom recently, one on November 22nd and one on November 30th. That was about a week to 2 weeks ago on both of those. And actually I posted in a couple of my recent articles regarding those buy list orders, and I did a free giveaway there for the latest one. And now I've got some store credit on Card Kingdom. I wasn't sure what to buy. So I wanted to pull the audience and to get some ideas on, you know, what maybe I should pick up with that store credit. So it wasn't really one particular card I sold there, but going back a little further, I think, in that buy list order, one card that stuck out, it was a big, a larger portion of the buy list order, and even though they weren't big, was, I sold 4 foil Legion's Landings. I actually talked about it in an article. And I kind of waited on it. I saw the buy list price on Card Kingdom. It was pretty good. I think it was like $8 or something store credit or even more. I think it was maybe $11. And I just kind of snoozed on it because I was waiting over the weekend, and then it dropped a few dollars per copy. And I was like, oh man, I shouldn't have waited. But I still included it in that buy list order just because I'm not playing as many tournaments, and it doesn't really see that much play outside of standard, even though it's a one drop. It could see play in modern. I think it did for a little while in black-white tokens decks, but that deck really never made it to like tier one, and it kind of fell even further. So I was like, all right, I'll get rid of this now, and maybe I'll pick it up later after it rotates in like a year and a half. And if I do pick it up later, I might consider picking up the promo versions. So I think to hone in on one specific card from that buy list order, that would be the one that I would point out. But that ship has kind of sailed now, I think, on Legion Lightning. Actually, let me check to see if Card Kingdom is even buying those in foil anymore right now. While I do that, I mean, did you have any questions on that card specifically?
I did not know. I think that makes sense. I mean, all for cashing out whenever you can, if you think that the opportunity cost is not worth sitting on a card that you think, you know, is not going to move that much in the near term.
Yeah, I just checked Card Kingdom, and they're still buying foil versions, just straight up foil versions, not the pre-release one or the promo one. They're still buying them at $6.50 cash or $8.45 credit, which is still pretty good. So if you have those lying around, I would get and you're not using them, I would get rid of those. They're doing the regular ones, non-foil, for $5.50 cash and $7.50 credit, which is also still pretty good. So, yeah, if you have these sitting around, I would get rid of these and lock in some value there.
Playing Commander at all?
I'm not sure. I don't think it would really see that much play, but I'm checking EDH Direct.
Yeah, I just did that too. 1151 decks.
Yeah, that's not very much, right? It's not zero, but I think I think I was reading recently, like the threshold is like 5,000 decks and above is where you kind of want to be for a quote unquote highly played, more highly played EDH card. So this doesn't even break that threshold. It's not even close. So yeah,
makes sense.
It doesn't really see that much play, and it's the buy list is still pretty high. So I think it was good to get rid of these. And playing off that, another card that has spiked recently that is also from the same set, it's Treasure Map. And I actually have this card sitting in my buy list card to Card Kingdom. It was another case of this where I kind of been waiting, and it dropped in buy list price a little bit already, I think by 50 cents per copy. So I think this is going to be another card that I'll be dumping very soon to Card Kingdom just because I don't really play that much standard right now. And it doesn't really see that much play outside of standard. I think MTG Stocks, I think there's one deck outside of standard that's listed that plays the card. I think it was like a Tron deck or something. So this is another card that I think if you have and you're not using, I would probably get rid of now. I think there's also a promo version of this too. So I think, if I want this card, I'll wait to rotation to pick this back up. And to circle back around, it wasn't a Tron deck. It's post-ramp and legacy that's listed that plays it. And I don't think it even plays four. I might play like one or two of.
Gotcha. All right.
So what about you? What have you been working on?
So, my angle is a little different since I focus pretty heavily on some of the older cards in Magic. So for those who don't know, I'm working on trying to finish another set of Power. Just played Power Unlimited for my old school decks. Mm-hmm. And so the most recent card that I acquired is an Unlimited Time Walk. So I have a friend of mine on Twitter who had just picked up a few pieces from someone locally, and basically he got a good price on a stack of them, and he was looking to recoup some cash quickly. So he sold me the Time Walk at a good price. So I was really happy to pick that up. But in getting that, I had to make some pretty, you know, anxious sales in order to raise the cash in order to support that. And so some of the stuff I've sold recently are just things, extra things from my collection that I wasn't using. You know, most recently I sold an Alpha Swamp. It was in, you know, pretty beat up condition. It had a quarter crease that yeah, I sold for like $15.
Wow.
Yeah. And then when
sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your flow there, but I kind of wanted to stop you there. When I saw that post in the Discord channel, it made me kind of laugh because I had picked up a few Alpha, really pretty good condition Alpha Basics, and I still have them. I don't really use them anymore. So I was like, wow, if you could sell this like played Alpha Swamp, looks like maybe I can move the few pieces of Alpha Lands that I have for a pretty good price.
Oh, I'm sure you could. And, you know, honestly, $15 is what I sold it for, and that's below anything on TCG Player, even for damaged.
Wow, I'm going to look right now, because I think I got them for, like, $5 before. So I have Mountains and Forests, I think.
Those are slightly worse than Swamps.
Yeah. I would agree there. But you said it was a private sale? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah, it was just on the Discord, the old school Discord.
Oh, okay. And so where were some of the other cards that you had gotten rid of?
I had an Alpha Granite Gargoyle that was in one of my old school decks. And, you know, as cool as the card is, and I love Alpha, it seemed like an opportunity for me to downgrade to try to raise some more cash. So I sold that with the hope of buying a beta down the line. So there's actually a gap now in my deck, but again, trying to raise some cash to support the purchase. I sold a beta Rock of Kerr Ridges as well. You know, a little bit, it was probably like between moderately played and lightly played, and that was, I sold that for $80. And then most recently, I got a couple of, you know, we had that TCG Player kickback over Black Friday and Cyber Monday weekend, and then we got store credit. I had like $20 in store credit, and so all I did was put that into a couple of the World Championship deck cards. It was a Grim Monolith and a Replenish, and those cards on TCG Player were not too far from the Card Kingdom buy list. So I picked those up basically just to ship to Card Kingdom's buy list for some trade credit.
Wow.
Oh, dude. Yeah, basically taking TCG Player credit and putting it into Card Kingdom credit.
Oh, I see. Man, as I was listening to you, I was looking at some of these prices on these Alpha Basics on TCG Player. They're really high, man. I mean, high compared to what I bought them at. I'm pretty sure I bought them around like $5, and they're going for like $30 for mint versions of these.
Yeah, that is
incredible.
I have an all Alpha deck, and it's got like 22, 23 swamps. And, you know, I got them at like $7, $8, maybe up to $10 each. And they're all kind of like moderately played condition. So they've really moved since then.
Wow. That's really crazy. I didn't know. It's good to know now that, you know, I have those cards sitting around. If I wanted to move them, I probably could and put them into something else, maybe more, you know, usable for me for tournaments. I mean, basic lands are obviously pretty usable, but, you know, I can probably use these to get some cards that I'm missing for decks if I needed to. It's cool.
The power of the all alpha format, I think. The alpha 40, whatever it's called.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
All right.
Let's see. I don't think we have any questions in the channel right now yet. So you want to switch over to starting to look at some of these questions that were posted on Facebook?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. So the first one we have here is, do we expect the same price action on modern staples this coming winter as in previous years? Many of us are holding Ultimate Masters, dodging staples in hopes of this.
For some background and for my own benefit, what happened in previous years during the winter time?
You know, I'm not really sure. I can't really remember what happened, but I think my guess is from this question is that a lot of the staples have they dipped in previous years when they released those master sets. And I'm guessing, you know, there's going to be a dip again with the release of Ultimate Masters on a lot of these staples. So I would think, you know, with the nature of these master sets, there's always going to be a dip because there's just more supply. But, you know, since Ultimate Masters is, I guess, going to be one of the last master set, if not the last master set that they do, if they do it again, it won't be for a while, I'm guessing years, you know, these staples are going to start to climb back up again. You know, I don't know how long that will be. Maybe it'll take a little bit longer just because there's even more supply of these staples, but they will still probably creep back up just because they're not going to do many more of these masters in the near future. And I think, you know, that's why people have been trying to snap up Ultimate Masters boxes on the cheap and just hold on to them, especially with the box toppers. I think the price point was $250 was a price that a lot of people were talking about, you know, in terms of a good price to buy boxes and hold on to.
So now, hold on a second. About the reprints in Masters, but the question as I look at it, it talks about, it says many of us are holding the Ultimate Masters dodging staples in hopes of this. So it's almost like the question is, do we expect modern cards that were not reprinted in Ultimate Masters, are those going to go up throughout the winter?
Oh, yeah. And, I think that's a good point. I think some of those, it's kind of tough to say because winter is kind of, is a little bit tougher, right? Because there's usually kind of a lull. You know, people have less money to spend on, or have less money to spend on cards or don't want to spend money on cards. So that means there's still, I think, a little more supply out there during the winter.
That might be true for like November, December, but I think come January, like for example, I'm looking at a chart for a card liberated, and I see the card goes from $28 in December of 2013 to $53 in February of 2014. And I see it $36 in December of 15 to about $55 in February of 16. And the same thing happens again in 2017. It goes from, you know, $42 to $60.
And then there's some spikes there.
In February of 2018, it goes from 60 to 80 or whatever.
Yeah, so there are some spikes there around January, right? January, February. January of 2016, January of 2017, January of 2018.
Yeah.
So, well, Karn got reprinted, right, in Ultimate Masters, so...
Sure, that's just an example.
Yeah, so that's why there's a dip, and then will it spike back up again in January of 2019? I don't know. It's
or will non-reprinted cards spike like Karn had been doing up until it got reprinted?
Does that make sense? I see. Yeah.
So like, what's not reprinted? I forget. I'm trying to remember some of the cards that weren't reprinted in the latest set. Was Cryptic Command, for example, was that reprinted?
Yeah, it was. I think it was reprinted. Let me double check here. I'm getting into the list.
Remember what people were talking about?
Actually, Cryptic Command doesn't look like it was reprinted.
It was reprinted in Iconic. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. And Roaring. There were some cards that people were talking about recently that were not reprinted, and they were kind of moved on them.
Yeah, a lot of them were, like, some of the bigger ones were, oh, I know one of the bigger ones, Surgical Extraction.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Surgical Extraction, Collected Company is another one. It was on one of my articles. I can't remember which one it was right now. I think it might have been 20 that that was listed there.
It's already jumped, you know, so in the winter it's too late almost.
Yeah.
And from $21 to $35.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. So, you know, to circle back around to the question, you know, will we see a spike in those? I think we still will. you know, because they're not reprinted. We've already, like you said, some of it's kind of already late, you know, especially with like thing like surgical extraction. I mean, it's kind of known already that that wasn't reprinted, so everybody got their, you know, picked up their playsets when they immediately found out it wasn't reprinted. So that spike has already happened on a lot of those. But yeah, there one that I think the one that I pointed out was Collected Company. So I don't know if that card actually spiked yet as much as some of the other ones. I'm taking a look at the chart again.
Yeah, it looks like someone mentioned Aether Vial in the chat. And that one has not spiked at all. It's very flat at about $5, $38 and change.
Yeah, that one's more interesting because it's been printed quite a few times. There's a couple of promo versions of it. Granted, you know, one of them is a masterpiece, so that doesn't really count as much because they're a lot rarer. But yeah, there's the From the Vault one.
Yeah, the Iconic Masters was the most recent reprint.
Yeah, and there's a lot of those. So that, I think that's why that card has stayed flat for a while. But that was funny enough that I mentioned that card in an article way back. You know, if you need those, you can pick those up safely. And those I don't really tank, but they will stay flat just because there's so much supply of those. But Collected the Company, if you take a look at this card, it actually sees play in quite a few decks. Mostly in spirits, banned spirits right now, banned spirits right now. It used to see more play via the Vizier decks, the combo with the Walking Ballista and Devoted Druid. Devoted Druid just got reprinted recently, so you know more people have access to that card. It sees play in Elves, which has kind of been popping up a little bit more.
It plays in the Malira combo deck, or is that still a thing, or is that over now?
That's not really that. You don't really see that too much anymore. It's usually the Vizier deck, but mainly it's Banned Spirits and a little bit of Elves. But the key thing here is that there's only one printing from this card, right, from Dragons of Tarkir. So that's why I pointed out this card, because a lot of people were focused on things like Surgical Extraction and Manamorphose and Goblin Lore. You know, those weren't reprinted, so those spiked already pretty hard, but Collecting Company hasn't. And it's interesting, you know, because it sees play in multiple modern decks and has usually a three or four of, and it hasn't really spiked. So I think this is a pretty good card to look at, especially if you don't have these. I think it's a pretty safe card to get into right now. They could reprint it in some supplemental set, you know, because it's, you know, it has to deal with creatures. So I can see them doing it in like some supplemental deck, but I mean, that's totally speculative. So, yeah, if you're looking for a card that might still have some spike potential, I think this is one of them.
I mean, $20, it's a tough pill to swallow since it's such a recent card, but at the same time, it's in the smallest set of a block, which is a big help. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it wasn't reprinted. I do think it was in one of the pre-constructed decks. Wasn't it in one of the Clash Packs or something like that?
Yeah, I can't remember what supplemental thing, but it might have been there. But, I mean, it wasn't a whole lot. And it was, you know, there wasn't any other set that was printed in. So it's just right. Still Dragons of Tarkir.
Right.
And Dragons, I don't think was... I probably shouldn't say that. I'm not sure if it was opened a lot or not. It might have, because people love dragons, but but maybe people got burned out on cons because they're the fetch lands and people were just going crazy on that set, and then they didn't open as much dragons. Yeah, and it's around $16. I mean, if you can get them for like 15 or under, I think that's a great price. The foils are a little bit tougher pill as well. They're like over $40, and I don't know if that's a good place to put some money in. If you're looking to flip, I wouldn't get foils of those.
Yeah.
So it's pretty
also worth noting the card hasn't moved in price basically since the beginning of the year. So 12 months, it's done nothing. It's been dead money.
Yeah.
There's foil and non-foil.
There's a question in the channel now. Maybe we can switch over to that.
Sure.
Before coming back to the the Facebook questions, there's quite a few more, so that's still a lot of things to talk about. So for a question, if you're still taking them, what do you think of the recent creeping up of smaller Commander Mana Rock? You know, like Fellwar Stones and Chromatic Lantern. Original Clash Pack, I had one collected company. Okay, that was a...
Chromatic Lantern, it says Thor and the Diamonds.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that, because I saw that the diamonds all spiked, and I had like a random 6th edition Fire Diamond in my one EDH deck. And to be fair, full disclaimer, I don't play Commander. I mean, I have two casual Commander decks, and they just sit there and rot. And so when I saw that I can sell one for like 50 cents or something, I just, it's a Card Kingdoms buy list, I shipped it along with, you know, when I had another buy list I was placing, I just added that in there. So it was kind of funny that you mentioned that.
Yeah, it's funny that you also mentioned that you don't play Commander. I have a friend that just kind of started playing Magic again. I think he played a little while ago, and he started playing again. We went to the coding boot camp together. He lives in Austin. I live in Houston. So he's, you know, came over my house. He's telling me, you know, I started playing Magic, and a little bit more of my coworkers are playing it. We play Commander at work. So he built like Commander decks, and he's all like into the game now to be a Commander. So that's really cool. You know, there's definitely still a lot of demand from Commander there. I think the big spike on those diamonds were the foil versions of, I think, 7th edition they were in.
And well, I think those spiked, that... the non-foil spiked too. Like, I'm looking at the...
Oh, like, I think they're Mirage, right?
Well, all of them. Like, 6th yeah. edition went from, like, 55 cents to almost $2.
Wow.
Sky Diamond. Like, if you're looking at MTG stocks, take a look.
Yeah, 6th edition one. Oh, yeah. It did spike and it came back down. Huh. It went from pretty much like bulk all the way to something that's not bulk.
It's pretty weird, so, because these were reprinted, not, you know, like in Commander 2014 and then the anthology stuff. So it's kind of funny.
Yeah. I mean, not a whole lot of decks, but. A whole lot of sets, but enough to where I think there's a decent amount of supply. So I don't know. Maybe there's just a lot of demand from Commander for these. You know, so people are always looking for them, and they probably just spiked. It's funny that Fellwar Stone was mentioned in that question, because I have had this in my TCG player. Cart for a really long time, and I was gonna pick up a playset of the dark versions just to have as a spec, and I never pulled the trigger on it. But
those are played very heavily in old school, by the way.
Okay, so yeah, I think that's where a part of the spike came from, not only EDH Commander. So I almost kind of wish I picked them up, because I wanted to get them, I think, around like $5. They were lightly played, but I mean, mint ones are going for, well, the price on mint ones are around $15 now. So I would imagine played ones are still just more than $5. You can probably get rid of them for maybe $7 or $8 or even $10.
Oh, yeah. But I bet you any of that money Card Kingdom is paying more than that for them on their buy list.
Okay, let me take a look at that now.
I'm pulling it up right now.
Yeah.
I ended up selling mine. I had some.
Yeah, they're buying them. $663 in credit. So, I mean, I could have like broken even on that, or just sold it in like a Facebook channel or something and made a little bit. So
72 cents on the Commander 2017 version. I mean, it's not old school.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, what do we think? What do you think of the recent creeping of those? I mean, I think, you know, if you have them again, and if you're not using them, I would get them. I would lock in the value now, since there's been a spike, but it looks like they're. They've been coming down in price a little bit. For example, I took a look at the Sky Diamond. Yeah, I saw the spike, but it's starting to come down from like the high of $2 on average to like $1.50. So yeah. I think if you have them and you're not using them, like I said, sell them in the spike, because they can easily reprint these again. As we already seen, they, like, for example, Sky Diamond was reprinted in the Commander 2014 deck. And I would imagine they're going to keep coming out with these types of sets just because Commander is pretty big. So yeah, I would lock in the value on these and get rid of them if you can. They can print these in the Oblivion. I mean, they're not going to like see too much play in like Modern or Legacy or anything. So
I do agree. I think that you have a little bit of time. I think, it spiked and then kind of sold off already. So if you're still holding them, there's probably no rush, but you probably want to get out of them before the next opportunity for print. So
yeah,
whatever,
yeah.
Commander 2019 or whatever that might end up being.
Mm-hmm.
For reference, I looked up on EDH Rec, like Fire Diamond, for example, is in almost 7,000 decks. That's partly because it comes with one of the decks, so it's probably a default include in many decks, but it's definitely a popular card. Meanwhile, Fellowware Stone is in 31,500 plus decks.
So oh, that's definitely past the
threshold. Extremely popular.
Yeah.
So it's been reprinted a lot more, but also way more popular.
Yeah. So, and there's another thing to point out there. Wizards often makes a lot of new mana rocks or kind of like, just these types of cards. What was the last set that had these types of, they were like filtering, that weren't necessarily mana rocks. Was it Dominaria that had them? They were like, I forgot. Were they new signets? I forgot. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Like you've got like Azorius signet and all that.
Yeah, there were some new ones though, and you can draw a card off of it. I think it was from Dominaria. But anyway, the point is, they're willing to make more cards like these, right? Different variations, and there could be a time where I don't know. They might make one that might be Lockets. There it is. There, thank you.
Codes also draw cards.
Yeah. So there's so many types of or like variations on these kinds of cards that maybe they'll print one that'll be end up being pretty awesome, and it might even take the slot of some of these, or maybe not take the slot, but they would see play alongside each other, so that could draw attention away from of these a little bit. So that's I think another thing to watch out for, right, with these kind of cards.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it would be a good card to like invest a lot of money, lots of money in to try to flip.
The only thing that you might do well on is like the original 7th edition foils or something if you really wanted to go deep.
Yeah, I was going to point that out. I think you had mentioned that in one of your articles in the past few weeks, right? You talked about some old foils.
Yeah, some of the obscure foils I definitely would stay away from, but I think like the 7th edition foil diamonds those are fine.
Yeah, there's some really expensive a lot of the 7th edition foils are very expensive. Like some of the pain lands are very expensive, but I don't think those really go down in value. But there's not a lot of room for those to grow very quickly. So they're also not, you're going to basically like tie up a lot of money in those. But I mean, if you have some extra cash, and you want to put them in some things, kind of diversify your portfolio, I think some of those are okay to diversify into. Urza Destiny Reserve List Foils. Okay, so that's another good point. I have a friend, I think him and another friend, they tried to corner the market on some of these foils. One of them sticks out in particular, and it's Mastercore. I think they bought like a few of these, or quite a few of these, just because it's a reserve list card, and sometimes sees play in some off formats like pre-modern. And it's just a very iconic card, and it's on the reserve list, and it kind of spiked in the last half a year. Yeah.
Card Kingdom pays $96 for foil Mastercore on its buy list.
Yeah, but if you look at the price on Magic or MTG stocks, the foil price is outrageous. I mean, the market price on the foil is like $300 something. So I don't think there are, I guess it's the foil copies that are on the market right now are kind of far and few between. So, I mean, kind of scarce. So, yeah. You know, this doesn't really see play in any competitive decks, but it's a very iconic card and it's on the reserve list. So I think maybe some other ones that are more playable. Okay, so here's a good this is a really good one that I came across the other day. It's not Urza's Destiny though, but it's very close. It's not on the reserve list either.
Cheating then.
What's that?
Cheating. I'm just kidding.
Sorry, you broke up there. What did you say, Sig?
Oh, and I said that's cheating. If it's not on the reserve list, that. But I was only teasing
you. Yeah. But these older, back to these older foils that are playable, not necessarily, maybe not even necessarily on the reserve list. Take a look at this card. I didn't even know. This popped up in a legacy list recently on Magic Online.
What is it?
It's Reverent Silence. Take a look at the foil price of this.
Oh, card. I know that card.
Yeah.
Nemesis, right?
Yeah, it's from Nemesis.
A player gains 6 life instead of paying.
It's a $20 foil common. Yeah,
yeah,
it's a $20 foil common. So,
definitely this card before.
Yeah, if it sees play and it's old like this and it's foil, I mean, there's the price is super high. Obviously, if it's not a reserve list card, they could reprint it again and it might tank this a little bit. But since it's kind of like an old school foil, maybe not so much.
It reminds me of Days.
Yeah, it's kind of hard. It's a little bit harder to reprint these cards with these alternate casting costs because Wizards doesn't like to reprint those too often just because they're kind of like quote unquote broken in a sense. So yeah, there's. Yeah, so there's definitely foils like these that you might want to look into to just, again, diversify your portfolio if you want to.
We got some more questions here.
Yeah, thank you for the answer. Another question. Most people in the MTG finance world do not take into account their own impact on the market for various reasons. It is pretty demonstrable?
Demonstrable, I'm assuming.
Demonstrable, okay. That certain calls from certain groups can make a change in the online availability of paper cards. No one that I know of tracks this in one spot. It seems a bit loose. Thoughts?
Well, I'm not going to sit here and talk down about any other financiers or whatever, but I do know that we talk about different effects like the Saffron effect, and we talk about sometimes how certain cards spike because it's mentioned on other podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a thing, and I think it's acknowledged to an extent, but yeah, it's one of those loaded things.
And so here's a couple of responses to that too. It would be useful to have a list of content creators popular enough to move needles. I think that's a pretty good idea. That's some fuel for an article to just list out some of these people that can move some of the needles and, link to these people on social media. And then people can start to ask them questions too, like, well, what do they feel, from there when they sink a bunch of money into a particular card? That's a pretty good idea. And then another person here says, we typically see the fall spikes come back down when speculators realize that it's hype and not real demand. I think that's kind of along the lines of what you just said, Sig. I think this is really key, right? And that's kind of one of the reasons why I started the Hold'em and Fold'em series originally, is because it's really focused on tournaments, right? The demand from the tournaments, because there's a lot of these spikes that happen, but, some people are just trying to corner the market or buy out something and, as it was mentioned here, they usually come back down after that. And it's really dangerous to just blindly follow those spikes and try to get in on those without any real demand, because they'll eventually come back down.
What about when people on certain podcasts talk about masterpieces and they talk about how those are about to spike, and then they go ahead and they do spike, and then they talk more about the masterpieces. How real do we feel about that those movements are?
Yeah, I mean, that same kind of goes with the masterpieces too, because you know some of those they're not really that playable. Like I think a good example is the Rings of what's the name of the call? Yeah, I mean that doesn't really see that much play in tournaments at all. Maybe just in EDH, but there could be a little bit of spike on that because like some people bought them out or something on TCG Player. But you know, if you look at a card like Engineered Explosives or you know, Chalice of the Void that are like played quite a bit and in multiples in multiple decks, then you know you have something to go on there. You know, there's definitely some demand. You know, even if someone tries to corner the market, there's still demand for those cards. So like even if that person puts those back out in the market, there's still going to be less of those because people have, you know, are still looking for those for their actual decks that they want to play in tournaments.
To be fair, Rings of Bright Hearth, I don't know how to pronounce that.
Yeah.
There are over 10,000 rec decks that.
Yeah. So I think that demand just comes from Commander, right? But not so much in competitive, like Modern or Legacy.
Looks like we got a build here. I wasn't thinking about just following those creators and their picks, but rather a list would allow a better way to observe their effects on the market as they unfold over time. So, you know, I'm not ashamed to go down this path. You know, I think that the Fast Finance podcast, which is James Chilcott and Travis Allen, they both are likely to move the needle in terms of card prices. There's the Brainstorm Brewery, so that's your Jason Altz, your Douglas Johnson, Corbin Hostler. If they mention cards on their cast, that might also move the needle.
Mm-hmm.
Who else is there? Anyone?
No, I can't think of anybody else off the top of my head. I think those are the guys that come to mind with regard to podcasts and when they mention cards.
I think those guys are going to move cards a bunch. Along with the Saffron Olive effect.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing how big of an impact Saffron has with those brews and stuff.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting. You know, some of them do catch on, some of them don't. I think the ones that catch on are kind of like, you know, cards that are also played in other decks aside from the brew decks that come out. So I think there's definitely still some value in looking at those, but you got to kind of like, you know, dig in the weeds a little bit, right? And you got to look at those lists and figure out, okay, which one of these cards are also played in a lot of other lists. So there's definitely some value to be had there if you do some more digging.
You got to be willing to go out on a limb on some of that stuff too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, if you have a little bit extra cash, you can try a little bit on those. To go off that a little bit, I remember when Renome Steamkin was spoiled. There were a couple cards, a little more obscure cards, that kind of spiked a little bit. One of them was Flamekin Harbinger and Pact of the Titan. And I picked up play sets of those because I wasn't sure if the deck was really going to take off. And then I also picked up foil Mass Hysterias. And I've actually kind of still followed those, even though that type of deck hasn't really taken off in Modern. But the cards are still more, they're at a price higher than what I bought them at. I mean, granted, I might, if I buy list them, I probably won't get all of my money back, but you know, if I traded them away, I can still get at least my money back or a little bit more. So, I mean, there's definitely, you know, like I said, if you have a little bit of extra cash and you kind of want to dabble into those more riskier things, you can. Here's some more feedback on that. Sig, are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay. They definitely influence short-term hype spikes, but typically only those holding those cards during the hype benefit. Buying into those spikes is a bad move. The real spikes are usually followed by significant increase by list prices. Yeah.
But you're saying that buying into those spikes is a bad move. The real spikes are usually followed by, that makes sense. So yeah. The fake spikes, you won't see that much movement on the buy list. The real ones, you'll see the buy lists move a little bit.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yep.
Yeah.
Actually, I follow Card Kingdom's buy lists very closely, and I will see them react with a lot of agility to spikes from different cards. They tend to up their buy lists in reaction to buyouts and things like that, but it usually only lasts a very narrow window of time. So if you don't, if the spike isn't real, then you have like a day to ship all your cards to Card Kingdom for a little tiny profit, otherwise they're gone.
Yeah. So I guess to play off that point too, I mean, if you're not really like up to date and quick on that, you know, it's very, very risky, right? Because you can like buy in and then just like sit for a day or a week, and you're like totally just you just like burned a bunch of cash, right? If you're not quick enough on those. So I've burned on some of those before. So I try to stay away from that because I'm not very good with those types of investments.
On the flip side, sometimes I early. So like Tolarian and Trancer is a good example where I picked up a bunch of copies from Card Shark for, you know, whatever, 50 cents each, and shipped them to Card Kingdom's buy list thinking, okay, quick, you know, the buy list spiked, $1.70 or whatever, I'm going to cash out on those. And then I saw people in the Discord selling them for $7 each.
And there's some more feedback on this is awesome. It's kind of like snowballing, which is good. I only move cards via buy list these days. I refuse to sell on eBay and TCG, so I live and die by good buy list prices.
Amen. So
yeah, there's a couple of things here that I like to say. I kind of do the same now too because I sold on eBay and the percentage that they take was quite high, I found out. So that ate up a lot of my profits. And I just buy list pretty much now, which is like my last couple of sales have been to Card Kingdom. They've been like, you know, a couple of large buy lists. And it works better for me. But, you know, I'm not saying that that's the only thing you should be doing. Obviously, you got to find out what works best for you. Those buy lists are great. And I was mentioning those kind of weird foils that I picked up, the Flamekin Harbinger and the Mass Hysteria and Pact of Titan. And the reason why I've been able to keep up with that is because I started using a new app that I found. It's called MTG Manager. And I started to track most of my collection using this app. And the reason why I'm mentioning that is because in my first article where I mentioned my first buy list order to Card Kingdom, some people gave me some flack for that in the channel, like, hey, why didn't you use like Trader Tools to find the best buy list prices on these cards that you buy listed to Card Kingdom? And even in my article, I mentioned, hey, I didn't really do that much research. I didn't really have that much time because I had a baby, I got work and all this stuff. And it was really easy just to go to Card Kingdom and like sell a bunch of stuff. And that's why I did it. But I was like, hey, I know there's tools out there that can help me find the best buy list price, like Trader Tools, but I just didn't have the time to invest into learning that tool yet, especially because you need to import a spreadsheet. But then I came across MTG Manager like a couple of weeks ago, a week or two ago. I was like, wow, this helps me to keep track of my collection. It allows me to export a spreadsheet, and I can be able to use this spreadsheet for something like Trader Tools now and Cardsphere, which I also signed up for an account for. And there's going to be a new article for a new series that I started. It'll be coming out tomorrow called MTG Questions. And the first article is what's a fast way to sell bulk? And I highlighted the steps that I took that I just mentioned right now to sell my latest stack of bulk to Card Kingdom because I used this MTG Manager app. It allowed me to export the spreadsheet, and I was able to finally use Trader Tools, and I looked at all the cards that came up in that Trader Tools list for Card Kingdom. And I just packed up that order and I sent it out to Card Kingdom.
Looks like we've got some more comments and questions here.
Yeah. So go ahead, Sig.
I was saying, in the beginning, I did what Tarkan said, so now I make more research picks, definitely influenced by this Discord and cast, and I buy fewer specs in larger quantities, rinse, repeat.
Mm.
I mean, that makes sense. If you're buying large quantities, it makes even more sense to use the buy lists because, you know, selling one card at a time, and if you have like 30 copies that you're trying to sell on TCG Player, it could be you know, miserable.
Yeah, it could be disastrous, right? You're like sitting on these cards, you're doing one-offs on eBay and Facebook or whatever, and then the card just keeps tanking, and then you just totally lose all your money on those.
I will definitely take less money per copy if I can move 10 at once rather than one at a time. It's just much easier.
Yeah.
Okay, so then the next comment, a question off of Sing Devotion to Card Kingdom buy lists. You can track Card Kingdom total inventory from the Trader Tools backend. I notice you don't mention that in public, but I don't know if that's because we don't want people to know.
Oh.
I've seen that before, but I've never actually pursued it. I've seen like, you know, you can look up a random common and they'll have like 600 copies in stock or something, but they don't display 600 on their website.
I see. And then we have...
What I love about Trader Tools is that, you know, when you look up the really high-end cards on Card Kingdom's buy list, it says, please email the, you know, at the Card Kingdom buy list, for whatever, for a price. But if you use the Trader Tools, you can see all those numbers there.
Mm.
I'm not getting in trouble for saying that, but that's why I use Trader Tools to track the buy list on like alpha and beta stuff at Card Kingdom.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm thinking about going back to the spreadsheet I have in Trader Tools now to look at some of the other vendors to potentially send off the rest of the cards on that list to those other companies. There's like MTG Seattle was another one. I think Channel Fireball was on there, and a couple other stores. So Miniature Market, I think, was another one that was listed on there. So I might do a couple more packages, but the reason why I haven't done it is just because a lot of it's like bulk. I can sell that to other places too, where I already have store credit, like Card Kingdom or maybe even Star City Games. So I might just send it to them so I can fuel the fire there to maybe pick up a larger card, like some, you know, inventions or maybe a dual land. But here's another comment too, that maybe for people that don't want to do buy lists or are not doing buy lists, you know, I very seldom buy lists as a direct seller. Mentioning or with regards to TCG Player, I guess, as direct seller, I rose above a lot of the problems that make people turn to buy lists. So, I guess it's kind of like turning the corner. I tried selling on TCG Player before, but I couldn't really get past some of those thresholds where I can like sell cards without shipping. And it just didn't work out for me just because I think, you know, I just didn't have enough time to devote to TCG Player. So I pulled all my cards from TCG Player, and I'm really just sticking to buy list right now. That doesn't mean I won't go back to it later, though.
I basically use buy lists or eBay, and I don't think I have any cards listed on eBay right now. But eBay gives you a lot more flexibility, I found. So
Facebook groups seem nice, but I haven't sold any cards to the groups yet. I might try that in the future.
Also, once you have a reasonable Twitter follower base, then Twitter's another good spot for selling cards to avoid fees.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I haven't done it through there either.
You've got to price the cards right. I mean, you got to be competitive. You got to be under TCG low. But, you know, as long as you price the cards competitively, you can move things on Twitter pretty
easily.
We got like 5 minutes. I think Mike is typing another comment here. I buy this because I can bank the credit. My finance goals have evolved from turn burn from new sex into buy list, bank credit, buy power. Nice. That's exactly this where I'd be.
Yeah, this is very interesting from Mike because it's crazy that he said this. And because I don't play as many tournaments now, I have less of a chance to like move cards around and trade and stuff. But yet I still follow the market every day. And so that's exactly the reason why I started doing more buy lists to Card Kingdom too. Is just like, hey, I have these cards sitting around and I don't know if they're going to go up or down. So, but I just want to be able to just, like you said, bank the credit, right? So if I want to play a tournament in the future, I have store credit sitting there. I can pick up these staples that I might need for a tournament, right? Or just like I said, pick up an invention, which I have had my eye on a few of them already. Engineered explosive, defense grid, pithing needle, trinisphere, and scroll rack, and there's one other one, but I just rattle off a bunch right now, and those are the ones. If you're gonna pick up any of those, I think those are the ones that you should really look into, because those are the ones that are still kind of low and have potential because they're played in lots of different formats and in multiples. So yeah, back to the buy list thing. Those are the kind of like the cards that I'm looking to like to pick up with my credit or fetch lands. There was one of the people that reached out to me for the giveaway. They mentioned picking up fetch lands like Arid Mesas and Misty Rainforest, and I'm missing those. So it was really interesting. I was like, oh man, I kind of totally forgot about those. I should look at the, you know, see what the prices are of those and Card Kingdom at Star City, where I have store credit banked. And I might just fire it off maybe this weekend, picking up some of those fetch lands or inventions. And yeah, it's super awesome, right? Because it's just another account where you have money sitting in.
Yeah, I've been gradually building up some Card Kingdom store credit, but I will say that I don't like to bank credit with ABU games because of the inflation issue that I've seen with their credit that I've written about before.
Can you explain a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. I've written about this some, so I feel like they continue to increase their credit numbers, especially on the old school cards, while not really moving their cash numbers as much. And mm-hmm. So what this is doing is it's creating like this inflation scenario where their credit is worth less and less relative to the US dollar. And so if you were to accumulate $1,000 in ABU games credit and sit on it for 6 months, your purchasing power will drop over that 6 months because of this inflation issue. This is what I've seen.
Mm.
So that's a caution that I've got. So with ABU games, as soon as I get credit, I, in fact, even before I get the credit, as soon as I ship a buy list, I go and spend that money. You can check out using this, you know, the option of I'm starting to get a trade order to purchase these cards. And I do that every single time. I always spend the credit even before I get it because I don't want to sit on any credit there.
Mm. How about that's not the same with other sites though, right?
Oh, no, it's just ABU games. I feel like, okay. You know, Kingdom is a lot safer.
I see. There's a picture of those. A couple of things here. Interesting.
Yeah, Mike agrees. Yeah.
Nice. Hey, I had a question for you.
Showing off. Yes, go ahead.
This cost me 6.6K in ABU credit. Okay, and he's, for people that are, you know, just listening, it's a couple of strip mines, graded strip mines, Candelabra of Tanos, and also graded Bazaar of Baghdad. Awesome.
9.5 Candelabra of Tanos.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Pretty good, yeah.
So the question for you is
6K.
I see. Okay. And see, what are, do you have some specs or cards that you're looking at? I mean, I mentioned a couple of things already that I've been looking at, like fetch lands and some inventions to spend my store credit on. What are some things that you're looking to pick up?
So, you know, I know I talked about the power before, but that's really just for use in decks. So there are basically two categories of cards that I'm interested in picking up now. One is, you know, I really like beta cards, especially some of the rares right now. I feel like the alpha stuff had all spiked and has been tapering off, has been coming back down. The beta stuff I don't think has moved as much. And you got to remember that there's only like 3,400 or whatever of each beta rare. So, you know, it's not 1,100, but it's still extremely low. And so I would love to pick up more of those. And the other thing that's caught my eye lately is, you know, I've noticed new lands really taper off. We all saw them spike a couple months ago. They all went crazy. Like 8 out of 10 dual lands were on Card Kingdom's hot list, and then they all disappeared. And Card Kingdom got a ton in stock, and prices dropped back down. And now if you go into the Facebook high-end group, you see dual lands and power everywhere. Mm. And I don't think that that's going to be there for a long period of time. I think we've got a couple months where dual lands will be plentiful and inexpensive, relatively inexpensive again. And then I think we'll return back to new highs come March or whatever. So
I see.
That's another area. But I will admit that I haven't put a single dime into Duel Lands yet. I want to, but because I've been prioritizing getting cards for my old school decks, I haven't been able to. But I've got my eye on it.
Cool. Yep. All right. Well, I got one card to point out before I think we kind of wrap things up because we're at the 9 o'clock mark.
Yep. Or 10 o'clock.
Or 10 o'clock. Yeah, wherever you are. There was a post on MTG Finance that was talking about Ultimate Masters again and some cards that are good to pick up. Someone mentioned Engineered Explosive. This is like, quote unquote, the best card to pick up. And I did a quick search. I went to Ultimate Masters set on MTG Stocks, and I filtered out just for Mythic and Rares, and I sorted it in ascending order. And I noticed that I think the card that has the best value right now is Fulminator Mage. Because if you look at that, that's the card that sees a lot of play across multiple decks, particularly for Modern, that's only about $10. And I think if that drops below $10 to like, if you can get it for like $7 or $8, I think this is a very good card to get. It's very versatile and it sees a lot of play. So that's just a card I like to point out before I wrap up from my end, and cards to watch out for. You still there, Sig?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I just think that's an interesting one. I mean, I know that's an Ultimate Masters, right? So you're thinking it's going to bounce back?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's one that'll bounce up a little bit. It might go back. It'll probably drop a little bit more to maybe, hopefully, like, if you can get for like $5, that'd be great. And it'll probably bounce back up to maybe like $10 or $15.
Will definitely come a time when Ultimate Masters cards will be huge buys and will be able to rebound. I'll try to write about that when the time comes. I don't think I'm quite there yet since the set hasn't even released yet.
Yeah, it'll be this weekend. So definitely just wait a little bit and wait till things drop and then start looking at some of those really highly played cards and start picking those up again.
All right. I think we're ready to wrap up. So thank you all for joining. Thank you for the questions. Hopefully this was helpful.
Yeah. And, you know, spread the word about it. We'd like to do more of these. We might have some new ideas coming up for future sessions. So definitely let people know about it. And hit us up in our articles, you know, with any questions or on social media. And we'll try to do our best to make this even more useful and valuable next time.
Yeah. Perfect.
Cool.
All right.
Thanks, Lee.
Thanks again. Yep. Take care.
You too. All right. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Bye.